here on Suzy 103.4. It's time for the June edition of On the Front Foot. That's Suzy Radio's cricket chat show. Hello, good evening. My name's David Jay. Tim Bowling is the other side of the panel. And Jim Grant is here as our pundit for the month of June. That's Jim Grant from the MinCC and a man of many other distinctions besides. And our guests later on are going to be Adrian Chappell, who's the chairman of newly promoted Three Bridges. They're in the Sussex Premiership this season. And then we're going to feature Tim's Club as one of our slightly out of the FM area clubs. It's Ian Dyson. It's the chair of Leatherhead Cricket Club. And I think we'll just hand the reins over to Tim at that point. Let's say our good evenings now. A very good evening to you both. It's good to have you here on, well, it's a warm evening in the studio, isn't it? And so much has happened in the last month. Jim, we were pointing out in the previous show that there was an inordinate amount of cricket during the month of May, with World Cup warm-ups and the Royal London and County Championship, everything else that was going on there. Jim, how are things with the Min? Because I know from conversations we've had privately, it's not all completely plain sailing.
No, it's been an interesting start to the season in that we have lost a number of fairly regular players to a league a Sunday league in Essex, and they seem to be preferring to play league cricket on a Sunday as well as a Saturday. These are largely players who play both days. So for a while we thought we might be facing a bit of a sort of existential crisis, but as you're probably aware, we're a wandering side. We don't have a home ground. We just sort of associate together. But actually we had 12 for last Sunday, so and we're at Newdigate on Sunday, and we seem to have a full team. A few young new lads have got involved. The internet has been helpful. One or two contacts have been made and people wanting a game. So we're hanging on in there.
Well, if you're at Newdigate, I feel on a bound to wander over for a cream tea at some point. We, as you know, Newdigate are among our very best friends on the show. We've got some news of theirs to carry later on. Tim, we've got your own club, Leatherhead, coming in.
Yes, that's right.
Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, Ian Dyson's coming in from Leatherhead Cricket Club. Ian's been chairman there for, I think, a couple of years now. And it's fair to say that the club's been through a fair amount of upheaval in recent years, but they're on the up again, so it'll be good to come and for Ian to come in and have a chat with him about what's going on. I'm obviously a member of Leatherhead Cricket Club. I haven't played for a couple of years. Renewed my membership this year. Whether I actually turn out and play again, we'll see. But it'll be good fun to have Ian in and have a chat with him.
Well, I think that'll probably be your section of the show tonight. Jim has already agreed to repair to the outer darkness, and Jim will be able to chip in as when he wants
to.
As well as the punditry. Now, in terms of the punditry, and as per usual, loads and loads of things, I'm just going to go very quickly through what's going on with our local league clubs, and perhaps we can stop and talk about one or two of the clubs as we go. Now, in the Premiership, Mansted beat Sutton, Reigate Priory beat Esher. So the Llamas, that's Reigate Priory, a top, four straight wins, 80 points, and Banstead second on 63. So that's one of the mighty that fell and is now with Tom Lancefield, ex-Surrey, and Dan Newton, the skipper. And they've got a new chap from Wimbledon whose name I can't recall, but got a big 100 on Saturday. So it's good to see the local rivals at the top.
Yeah, I think we might be having possibly somebody coming in from Banstead later on in the season, so that would be good. We haven't had Banstead in yet on the show.
Indeed. Have you played at Banstead or the Priory?
I've never played at either ground, I have to say. I've watched a bit of cricket at the Priory, obviously, but no, I've never been to Banstead.
It's a nice ground. Scored my top score at Banstead. It's a good game, that.
I got some runs on. They've got a second ground out the back. I was playing, I think it was a conference fixture against their thirds, and got some runs. Didn't quite make it to three figures. But anyway, so that's the Premiership. Chipsy Coolsden Walcountians are fourth in Division 2, and Dorking, in spite of losing to Dulwich, are second. And then up the road here at Merstham, now our old boys, Simon Rivers, Ben Baker, and Laurie Nicholson, all in the runs as Merstham climbed out of the doldrums. They're up to eighth, but they're only 5 points off fourth all of a sudden. So that's going well. And in the Sussex Premiership, East Grinstead beat Mayfield. They're fifth with 89 points. Roffey still running away with absolutely everything. And they're 31 points clear at the top, 5 wins out of 5. Three Bridges we'll talk about later, but they beat Brighton and Hove, so that's one for them. Ifield struggling, having been relegated to Division 2. They're 9th with 60 points, 9th out of 10. Crawley Eagles are 6th in Division 3 East. And in Division 4 West, Crawley won again, they're 2nd. Felbridge and Sunnyside beat Worthing 2s by 179 runs.
That's a big old win, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then Newdigate, you mentioned, Jim. Newdigate 5th in the Fuller's Premiership after beating Godalming. And not only did Newdigate beat Godalming by 128 runs, but Ben Cameron took 8 for 40, and that's the second best ever by a Newdigate player. I presume that must be the start of timed games. I wouldn't be too sure about that.
But they scored 300 runs as well that day, didn't they, Newdigate? I mean, that was a good performance from them. I think, was it Dave Arnold scored 81, Matt Clark 97 in that 305 for 5. So a convincing victory against Godalming. As you said, Ben Cameron taking 8 for 40.
Eight
so
for 40.
Yeah, good effort, good effort.
We've got a little bit of news from Newdigate somewhere down, but we'll go to the club news in a second, because Newdigate 2s are 3rd in their division. They beat Caterham by 7 wickets. And our old friends from Hawley are their 3rd in the Fuller's Division 1. They beat Ripley, and South Nutfield are suddenly on a roll again. They're joint top in the Surrey Downs with East Horsley after 5 games. Both sides have maximum points. Now, you played at South Nutfield.
Oh, South Nutfield, yes. I've played for South Nutfield on one or two occasions. Alan Reid used to play there, a old friend of mine and ours. Lovely ground. We had a fantastic, many, many years ago, had a fantastic late finish in the darkness where our number 11, all results possible with the last ball, but on our number 11, not noted for his batting, managed to sort of snick the ball through the wicketkeeper's gloves for 4, and we ran around like mad things. It was
in
a great
the pitch
game.
Black, was it?
It was in the pitch black. I got a tidy little 40 to set us up.
That's why you told that story,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think the thing about South Nutfield, where incidentally I took a hat trick. Bowling my slow left arm pies, and nobody even noticed because it was the last two balls of one over and the first of the next. that was for Priory Sundays when Richard Stather was around all those years ago. Yeah. I think the thing about South Nutfield is that generations have tried to blast it onto the railway line, and it's just a little bit further than it looks.
Yes.
And you're bowling down the hill from the railway line, which means your angles are all a bit.
I don't think I've ever played at South Nutfield. Yeah. I think it's one of the local grounds I haven't played.
It's really
at.
Nice.
It's a lovely place. Yeah. I mean, we've got strong connections there, the Mills brothers, and Chris Walker is an absolutely brilliant correspondent. And I think part of the reason that we didn't hear from them last year, Tim, is that Chris had taken a backward step from doing the correspondence. Yeah. But he's been ever so good again, and I hope we'll get somebody in from South Nutfield.
There's a weird detail about that great game we played there many years ago, I just remembered, is that we had 5 left-arm bowlers.
I hate left-arm bowlers, I have to say. That would have been my absolute nightmare.
Seam up and spin.
No, don't like that at all. Awful.
Do you know, the odd thing is that as a left-handing opening batsman, I didn't like left-arm bowlers either.
No.
You should do, because, strictly speaking, left-arm over to a left-handed bat is the only time that you get it on your pads properly. Yeah. Otherwise, it's always going across you the other way.
That's true. Yeah.
But I was just so used to it going across me and floating Gower-esque to third slip, you know.
I guess that's the thing. I guess as a left-arm batsman, you would be used to it slanting across you. The opposite for right-handers. I hated it coming across me.
I was never really much of a bowler, as you know, David. But when I did bowl, I bowled sort of little kind of left-arm dobbly swingers, and I quite liked bowling at left-handers because for once you were moving the ball away from a batsman. Yeah. You know.
And it had already, I think, got ingrained in me that my foot was just going too far across, and then that became a sin with the right arm over the wicket as well. And I was always a little bit, shall I say, Alistair Cook-like, playing around my front pad. But I didn't get as many runs as Alistair. We got some news here from the clubs as well, chaps. So Newdigate again, looking for umpires for first-team fixtures. £45 per match on offer. Anyone who would like more information should contact Chairman James Penfold, JK_Penfold@hotmail.com. leatherheadcricket.com. Kanna Shanmugam's been on, Tim.
Yep, from Lye.
This is Lye. Mm-hmm. Played at Lye, Jim?
Yes, played at Lye, yes.
Well, again, there was a strong grammar school connection
there. Yes, there was. Yeah.
The Chenneries played at
Lye. The Chenneries,
yep.
Mark Holman, Simon Burley, but I mean, they're all...
Well, that's going back a few years.
Oh, yes, it is.
They used to serve at tea time, they used to serve the big Cornish pasties with mashed potato and baked beans.
I can't remember that.
Oh,
that
I tell you what, on a hot day.
Well, and all day games on Sundays, yep. You know, with lunch, which was entirely picked up from what we were doing at Hartswood in those days. Anyway, Kanna says Saturday friendly cricket is continuing in spite of the Sunday league, Tim. The league ethos is for clubs to play the game in the Sunday spirit, but a league format, and so draws are possible to encourage the art of getting 10 wickets, winning draw and losing draw possible, and this offered live fixture security because there were regular cancellations with Sunday friendlies.
Well, that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
I'm in favour of the draw option,
yes,
as you well know.
Yeah.
I like that as part of cricket.
Yeah.
Well, we sit here every time and say that once the necessity to take 10 wickets is neglected, then part of the game dies forever and ever.
Well, as we know, when you're playing limited overs cricket, there's nothing worse than the team batting first, scoring a huge total, and the team second knows they've got no chance.
Especially
if
you're playing Sunday cricket and you want a close game.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you have to have captain to know how to manage a game, don't you? And, unfortunately, I think increasingly, with it being played less and less, there are fewer people out there who understand that art of kind of, you know, making a game, if you know what I mean.
But I'm sure you've played in some absolutely brilliant games where it goes down to the wire, your last two men are in, and you've got no chance of winning, but you're padding out for a draw. It's brilliant. Those are the best games.
I've played out for a draw this first game of the season, and that lovely early season weather in April, Easter Sunday, miles away up in Oxfordshire.
They're great games.
I've stuck it out, and it was good fun.
They feel like wins, don't they? At the end,
they do.
It was after your time, Jim. I did one of the last time games at Hartswood against the old enemy, the Royal Grammar School, Guildford, and Reigate were 9 down with 18 overs to go, and I think it was Mark Stevens and Arthur Chellis. I could be wrong. Batted it out, and that's every bit as exciting as crash bang wallop plus another TiVo maximum or whatever.
Well, the classic example of that, I guess, at the test level was Atherton and Russell, wasn't it, in South Africa, batting out in the dark, and you know, and again, one of the most exciting test matches that's probably been played.
Oh, and Panesar in, was it in Cardiff?
Yep. And before your time, Tim, and actually pretty much before mine as well, but Watson and Bailey at Lord's in 1953 batted the afternoon out just about to effectively save that Ashes series, which England then won at the Oval all those 66 years ago. Anyway, there we are. Speaking of Hartswood, next Wednesday, the Reigate Grammar School Sports Ground is hosting the English Schools Cricket Association National Under-15s T20 Finals.
Oh, great.
I did a few games in the Under-19 competition, 9:30 on a dark Sunday morning on the second team ground at Hurstpier Point, and those pink balls were going round corners. Never seen anything like it. They were nearly like boomerangs. But anyway, that's a good thing, and so for anybody who's interested, there are 4 fixtures, 2 semi-finals next Wednesday morning, final and third fourth playoff in the afternoon. It all starts at 10:30, and I saw our old friend Anthony Davis, as you did, Jim, we were at the other night, and apparently the Grammar School have put their under-13 jersey tour back to the Maybank holiday, done it on the Maybank holiday again, and it was very successful.
Good.
Now, from our clubs, Salford's has its Club and President's Day on Sunday the 23rd of June, the usual carnival stuff, bouncy castles, etc., but Sanjay Patel told us, Tim, that they're after a lot of clubhouse refurbishment there.
Yeah, that's right,
following in the footsteps of Newdigate. So, Salford's Club and President's Day, barbecue, brand new bar, Sunday the 23rd of June. The week after, Tadworth have their Charity Cricket Day, held to raise funds for the Children's Trust, 6 teams playing short form matches, range of other activities. You can contact our good friend Craig Stevenson, who's the chairman, 07969 594 538. And in charitable terms, then T20 League Cricket at East Grinstead on the afternoon of Sunday the 23rd, and the thing about this is the club are hosting SARS Sanctuary as the team cycles from London Bridge to Paris in honour of Sarah, who was killed by terrorists on London Bridge during the atrocity. Her parents are in London for the inquest, asked if East Grinstead could host the ride's first stop, and alongside CD Phoenix Network netball, are hosting a netball match in honour of Sara. Sussex Cricket Foundation going to be there, Sussex County Cricket, Mayor of East Grinstead and other dignitaries.
Sounds good.
So that's, you know, Tim knows, I was dining in Borough Market on Tuesday night, Jim. It just beggars belief.
Yes, is it? Yes.
It's beyond beggaring
belief.
Was
it 2 years ago now?
2017.
Yeah, amazing. 2 years has passed so quick. It was incredible. It was awful, awful event. Terrible. But that's good that they're doing some good things there, though. That's good.
And a club, finally, that we've not heard of and not really involved ourselves with, and I think it's a shame because I played loads of village cricket there in the old days, this is Dorman's Land. Don't know whether they play in the Downs or whatever, but we can find out about it. Yeah. Anyway, this Sunday, 12 noon, family day, spectators and players alike welcome, a junior six-a-side game at 12, and then 3 6-a-side senior games. People who are guests are very welcome. The game's about 40 minutes each, 2 semis and a final, starting at 4 p.m. running through till 6, barbecue, bar and teas, and the India-Australia game on TV.
Sounds good.
So I imagine there's a Dorman's Land website. I don't have a contact here, but the notice does say anyone who'd like to play in the six-a-side games, let Dorman's Land know.
Well, maybe we'll try and get in touch with Dorman's Land and at some point get them on the show.
We could try, couldn't we? Is that another one that's been off your radar?
Yes, completely. Yeah, I know someone who used to play there, but and has played in the early days for them in, played a few games, but no, I've never
I've not played at Dorman's Land either.
No, years and years ago, a very long time ago, our first Saturday fixture of the season, when Cats were still White Oaks, was always at Dorman's Land. Lovely chap, I don't suppose you'll be listening, a guy called David Tribe, who played for East Grinstead Ones on a Saturday and the Village on a Sunday, usually took 100 off us. I took a catch at Dorman's Land off the first ball of the season.
Great.
In at short square leg to a medium pacer. Well, no helmets in those days.
No.
What about that? And my other recollection of Dorman's Land is propping the bar up at the end of the game with Andy Ripley, England rugby international, 440 runner, rower, subsequently died far too young of cancer, and arguably one of the world's worst fast bowlers. He did an impression of the village blacksmith, Jim, in England, there, England.
Yeah,
but
right.
That's about as far as it went. But I remember propping the bar with Andy Ripley, talking mostly about rugby. And he said to me, he said, "You're 38, aren't you?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you'll find that when you get to 40, it's as if somebody flicks a switch. And after that, you either work at your fitness or you let yourself go." I didn't really heed his advice.
Well, nor did I. I'm hanging on in there, though.
But anyway, that was Dorman's Land. I was going to, in the time that we've got left, because our guest is outside through the glass, I was just going to ask you, with last Saturday as a prime example, about the pressures in the modern day of virtually every sport being played all the year round, and the proliferation and the possible detriment to recreational cricket of everything that was going on last Saturday. Rugby league, rugby union final, preparations now for the England Women's World Cup, and the, is it the League of Nations, Jim? The men's tournament?
Nations League.
Nations League or something, isn't it?
Portugal, Switzerland was last night,
football,
it's England, Netherlands tonight. Yeah.
All that going on, umpteen and one things.
Boxing.
The boxing, Joshua,
and
you know, the poor old leagues trying to run a full programme of fixtures when all this stuff is going on. It's absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? Well, I suppose, gentlemen, we are better off doing the current club news and chatting a little bit about the clubs that we know and don't know than going on to our list of topics. So we'll shove them back by yet another month. Welcome back to the second part of the June edition of On the Front Foot here at Suzy 103.4. Tim Bowling and David Jay attempting to make the wheels turn, at least. It's time to welcome our first guest. Adrian Chappell is the chair at Three Bridges Cricket Club, club I've only had the pleasure of visiting once or twice, and that very early in the season for T20. Adrian, welcome to On the Front Foot.
Thank you very much.
It's lovely to have you here, and first first and foremost, and this will give you a nice opening gambit, congratulations on your elevation to the Premiership again this season, and tell us how that came about and how you're faring.
I think guys sort of contributing, or everyone's contributing quite well within the squad. It's one of those very much team effort sides. No real superstars in there. If you remember the kind of the good one day sides of Gloucester and Warwickshire, where everyone pulled together. A really good atmosphere amongst the players. Did a great job last year getting out of Division 2 back to the Prem. And yeah, things going well at the moment.
That's really good. It's interesting to me because I've got friends at Burgess Hill, and I watch Burgess Hill quite a lot, who were on the verge of being relegated to Division 4 and ended up in Division 2 the following year. So that's been extraordinary. There's a relatively level playing field, isn't there, once you get below the very top clubs. I mean, Roffey obviously are steamrolling all before them, but between the sort of top of Div 2 and the bottom of Div 3, there's not that huge a gap.
I think within that, it's very much, I suppose, at that level, if anyone misses the key player. So if you can get your best sides out every week, as you said, fairly level. What you don't want is obviously, you know, top of the table wheels out their strongest, bottom table missing a few due to other commitments. Then you have that mismatch.
And how's it gone so far this season?
I think with us, everyone is very, very pleased, obviously, to be back in the top flight. There was a real buzz going up into it. And I think the guys know they've all got to be there, all pulling together, because there are some very good sides. You mentioned Roffey, certainly. They're seasoned pros at winning at that level. So everyone, showing great commitment. Netting, obviously, where we possibly can. Weather interruptions obviously get in the way there.
Over the years, I think one or two slightly peripatetic, slightly itinerant players have gravitated to Roffey. They seem to have soaked up one or two from other clubs or people who've been around and about.
I think with Roffey, what they have, again, they are they're a good bunch to play against. There's a real sense of real enthusiasm. They might lose the odd game together, but they certainly win a lot together. And I think if you were thinking of moving, and you're good enough to be considered for their kind of front 15, if you like, with that big chance of playing in the first team, you'd think, that's a club I would actually want to go and play for. So I think they've marketed themselves very, very well at Roffey.
And what about things at Three Bridges in light of your promotion now? Much of an influx of players? You stayed steady? How's that been?
Relatively steady. One or two newcomers coming in, actually lower down the sides as well, which is always nice because it's not all about the first team.
How many teams have you got playing on a Saturday?
So currently we're down now to three.
Right.
We'd love to get back to putting four league sides out. And I think some weekends when everyone's available, yes, we could get four out. But
it's tricky, isn't it, having four teams? I think probably touch on this with Ian Dyson from Leatherhead later. It's difficult often to try and get those lower sides through. Yes. But actually, they do. I'm sure your third 11 probably fulfils a good role in bringing through Colts and that type of thing. So
absolutely, it's the seniors, and it'd be lovely again to have the fours back in who would play that bit further down. The even younger Colts could play.
Yeah.
And of course, we got senior guys, 60s plus. Who then can still compete.
You play level on a Sunday as well, do you?
The club does.
Yep.
Yeah. Personally, I haven't now for a little while due to other commitments. Mm. But yeah, we're still fielding a Sunday side for friendlies and then other cup competitions, like the National Knockout and the Bertie Joel, also Sundays.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a healthy healthy club. And how long have you been chairman for?
6 years.
Right,
now.
Okay.
And is that onerous, Adrian?
Depends who's listening, doesn't it? No, I think I've got a very good supporting team around me. I've got a very good deputy chair, got a very good treasurer. We've got a good committee from kind of senior people, non-players, younger players. So we've actually now got a pretty good cross-section of the club there.
So you find it's possible to get the younger generation involved at a management level?
Yes, now, yeah. A couple of lads now in their mid-20s. I think it's very easy to say it was like that in my day, and this is how we do it, but it's not necessarily how they want it done now, and it is about moving the club forward. So, absolutely.
fresh blood onto it. Very good.
I like the way that the Sussex League has maintained the balance, the limited overs and the declaration games, and Surrey Premiership does that too. I like that.
I think, yeah, in the top two divisions, it's still like that. Anything below the top two divisions is now all limited overs.
Yeah.
And anyone who's listening from Three Bridges know what I'm going to say, that I still want to see more timed cricket played, as you say, with that having the balance. You've got limited over, win and lose, but you want, I think, a bit of timed win, lose and draw.
I think I mean, we were talking about this earlier on, and Jim mentioned it, as did David. I think, unfortunately, the sort of direction of travel appears to be towards limited overs only, doesn't it, really? I think ultimately that's where we're going to end up, which is not a good thing in my view. But
no, I think with me, I'll sit with you on that one. It's not, for me, it's not, because I think it just encourages, to me, it encourages kind of some irresponsible batting, people teeing off, going out at it too quickly. You know, you're not Owen Morgan, you're not Joss Butler, you're actually a club second team player. Sometimes you need to dig in, bat a bit more time.
Yeah.
And I think you can get into bad habits, and it's noticeable now. We're playing 45 overs a side. Sometimes you're not even batting out.
No, and that's, well, that's the problem. Yeah. That's the problem. Younger players will see it as a limited overs game and start from the first ball as though they're in a T20 match.
Yeah.
And then, as you say, you're often you're out 30 overs in, you're done, and it's no good.
I'd say certainly. I mean, again, it can be a little bit. In my day, we only played timed cricket, and I know absolutely. Things move on, and obviously look at the way the one day games developed on the TV. There are some fantastic games, but I think there's still room for both, particularly the cup competitions obviously have to be limited over.
Remind us about the Bertie Joel.
I think it's been used in various guises. I think it's the Club Cricket Conference Cup now, but formerly the Bertie Joel. I think it's been known as the M25 Cup.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much, the teams in and around the M25, so home counties north and south. Limited overs, 45 aside. We had a walkover first game. Unfortunately, our opponents couldn't raise a side, which was a shame, but we've got the second round coming up. So get up with perhaps the demise of lots and lots of competitive cricket on a Sunday. We're only running one Sunday friendly side now, where it used to be when I was younger, it was kind of three, four sides even. I think having the cup competitions does provide that extra competitive cricket.
There's a Sussex T20 competition, isn't
it? It is, absolutely. Yeah, in that, so that's what used to be, well, it's still the Sussex County League Cup, if you like. It used to be a 45 over competition. That's now T20. It's coloured clothing as well, which the limited over Premier Division cricket is now. It can be coloured kit for the first teams, anyway. The final held at Hove. We've been fortunate in the last few years to be down to Hove a couple of times and win it. And a few years before that, we won the final in the second team at Horsham as well. So something's actually been quite a happy hunting ground for us.
As I say, the one time, certainly in recent years, I've been to Three Bridges was when Burgess Hill were there for T20, very, very early in the season.
And I believe Three Bridges lost that one, didn't they?
They did indeed,
yeah, I was playing in that.
Now, tell us a little bit about the ground. Have you got complete control over the ground at Three Bridges, which is to say outfield as well as the square?
Whilst it is council-owned, so we do pay rent to the council for it. Everything we do on the ground, it's at our cost, and we have full control on what we do. So everything on the outfield, square, you name it, purchase of sight screens, covers, it's all cost incurred by us, maintained by us. And groundsman, currently Steve Brown, fantastic job on it.
And you say cost. It's a costly business, no?
Yes, absolutely.
And do you manage to do you maintain one club budget these days, or is it separate budgets for ground and equipment and other bits and pieces?
A very good treasurer that we've got, so it's hands on everything. We've got one or two accounts, so money put there for that, over there for that. But ultimately, the main income stream for a club like ours is the bar, it's subscriptions, it's social nights. There isn't a big sponsor, if you like, bankrolling.
I think that's Tim's cue to ask you about the sort of events and social nights.
I mean, whenever we have different guests in here from different clubs, it becomes obvious that the social part of the club is a vital sort of lifeblood of the club. What sort of events have you got going on this summer, which keep the club going?
We've got yours truly running the traditional quiz night. We'll have a race night. There'll be a bottle bingo night, which is kind of fairly sort of bar Olympics, bar games kind of thing. Mm. The end of season club dinner.
Yep. Yep.
Less formal than it was.
Yep.
And then really anything else as well. Yep. So if it's club members wanting to look at a party, friend of the club wanting to hire somebody, we're looking at doing that as well.
Do you find that after matches, presumably home players, your players stay on at the bar for a drink? Do you find opposition players stay on afterwards for a drink, or do they just head off back to their own clubs?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
That. There are some clubs who are pretty good at staying,
yeah,
and will do so. I know the first team have tried where possible, at least to all stay for one and then move on. I know it's not perhaps what it was, again, years ago. Obviously, drink driving has got something to do with that as well.
Well, and I suppose, to be fair, Adrian, the higher up the Sussex League you get, the longer the distances tend to be as well. You've got some fair old schleps, haven't you?
Absolutely. It could be Chichester, well, obviously, as far as Chichester, as far down as Hastings.
Yeah.
But funny enough, you'll sometimes find they may stay because it's a fair trek back for them to their own ground.
Mm. Yeah.
Might be close by the time they're back.
Yeah.
They'll actually have one with us.
There is, I think, a bit of a homing instinct amongst some of the younger players,
yeah,
the 20-somethings. Let's get back to the club.
Yes, I think there is that.
But nonetheless, I mean, anecdote again. Saturday before last, Burgess Hill and St James Montefiore from Ditchling. So local derby again. In fact, in that division, there's five or six clubs all within a stone's throw. And St James's, after the game, which they lost to Burgess Hill, unexpectedly, there were the chairs round in a circle on the outfield on both sides, sitting having a beer with one another.
That's good, isn't it? As you say, often, especially when a side's lost, and the instinct is to just get in the car and go.
Yeah.
If you've lost and you've hung around, that's good.
Our first team certainly had that with Chichester last year. Again, exactly the same. Mm. I think we'd won the game, but the Chichester lads stayed. Actually, everyone together, and we made sure, you know, take a picture, let's get it on the Twitter feed and show what can be done.
Yeah.
So quiz nights and all the usual things, really, then. And and is the clubhouse a vibrant, functioning sort of clubhouse? Is there what's going on?
It's what we make it.
Yeah.
We are actually looking at the moment of a bit of a revamp plan. A couple of good members of the club have put plans together, if you like. It serves its purpose. It's comfortable enough, but if you can make it look a lot nicer, it's the chance of bringing a few more friends of the club down. People then more willing to think, do you know what, I'd have my 21st or my 30th or whatever birthday there, rather than, oh, just down the cricket club.
Well, I notice that Leatherhead are just going to open their premises to private functions.
That's right, they're thinking about doing that, which I guess is a good money spinner as well, isn't it? Especially in the winter months, if you can let it out for parties and things like that, it's a good money spinner.
That's where somewhere like Hawley, being a sports and social club with a squash section and a hockey section.
Yeah, I mean, it works when you've got complete control on the on the actual clubhouse. I played for a while. Leatherhead were together with Cobham Cricket Club, and we used to, third 11 used to play at Cobham. And the problem was, it was, they built this lovely brand new clubhouse down there, two levels with a lift and everything, and every week in the summer they'd have a wedding there, and the cricket club was told to, we can have one drink and then go because we've got a wedding. And so if you're controlling the clubhouse, perfect. If you're not, you know, it's not quite so good.
Jim, does the Min venture into Sussex very much?
No, it's interesting that our fixture list has evolved in a very ramshackle way, as you're aware, over a period of time.
A long period of time.
Surrey, Kent, Oxfordshire, one game in Hertfordshire. Used to play in Essex, but not anymore. And obviously a tour in Somerset and Wiltshire.
Yeah.
No, it's really interesting that I don't have an explanation for that.
From former wandering experience and latter day experience, watching Burgess Hill a bit, you're missing out.
Yes, I'm sure we are. I will say, just in the light of the kind of conversation, we are very popular with. Still very popular, I think, with our hosts, because we do tend to stay for one and sometimes two. And I think that's one of the great things about wandering cricket, is the sociability of it. And I think we've got four fixtures on our list that go back now to 1985, and you know, we're really good friends with those people, and
yeah.
You know, you just really look forward to just seeing the old guys as much as playing the game. Yeah. Really,
I'm going to spring this one on you a little bit, Adrian. So take a deep breath, by all means, before you answer. You've been around Sussex and elsewhere, no doubt. Favourite grounds?
I've been fortunate enough to play in a T20 final at Hove, so that's got to be put down onto that. Personally, Southport, one of Lancashire's satellite grounds from a long-standing tour from Three Bridges that we used to tour Southport. I'd say North Devon, which is a stunning ground, and I know it's where David Tribe plays, who you were talking about earlier. And a personal one, I was fortunate enough to play at Bridgetown Oval.
Wow.
Barbados.
Wow.
Quick 2 for 20. I'm just going to get that in.
And was that before it was all rebuilt for the World Cup?
Yeah, November 94.
Okay.
So a little while ago.
Which team were you playing for?
RAF Adastrians.
Oh.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, yes. No link with the RAF other than have bat, wheel travel. And I play cricket for the bank side that I work for.
Right.
Many years ago, when there was a lot more bank sport, we did have a fixture against that particular RAF side, and got invited as a guest.
Wow! And then you ended up playing there.
That's absolutely
amazing.
Yeah,
perfect stuff.
What was the crowd like? Was big crowd there? Was
half a dozen workmen, and the players. That was it.
Well, that's the average crowd for a test match in Barbados these days. Never mind. I won't go off at a tangent. I'll press you just a little bit further, if I may, Adrian. What about local grounds?
Got to say, obviously, at home, because I think particularly from one angle at Three Bridges, when you've got the football club to your back and you look at our clubhouse surrounded by the trees, it does look, I think it looks a picture of a ground, personally. A local one of mine, favourite, that we don't play on anymore, sadly, was Sunday Ground, was Cranley. I don't know why. It's just the ground that I just really enjoyed playing on. I think if you have good games there, it starts to work on you.
Yeah.
Actually, that's a really nice ground. And of course, the old ground at Hastings before the shopping centre was put on it. The old Central Ground.
I played on the Central for the 40 Club shortly before it was bulldozed. 40 Club against the William Parker School.
Okay. Yeah.
And who was the Sussex off spinner who went to Durham? Nicky Phillips.
Yeah.
When he was still at the William Parker School, I made 40 odd against a decent off spinner, left-handed. So I was quite pleased with that day. The problem with that, the 40 Club being the 40 Club, was that the boundary one side was about 38 yards and the other side 138 yards, and that meant 4 40 club fielders relaying it in, you know, and sevens being run. But yes, lovely place. And I suppose in the Premiership, Adrian, somewhere we ought to mention perhaps is Fulking.
Absolutely, yeah. I'd again, I think a lot of people who've played on it would say that the old ground of the two was probably the prettiest, with clubhouse one end and then straight onto the downs. The new ground, obviously, is a fantastic outfield. I think it's great to play on, but maybe just lost a little bit of the character. But it's still a nice place to play.
The interesting thing about Fulking to me was that because of the dimensions, they had the one artificial strip, and everybody said, no, you can't do that. And it's gone back to a grass square, and it seems to be functioning perfectly well.
Yeah.
But,
and what a great place for their third and fourth to play.
Absolutely lovely place. We played some Sunday against their Downsman, I think, was a Sunday friendly side. And do you think you're going to tread water at least in the Premiership?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, as we've said, staying up is good enough, but we want to be better than hanging on. Obviously, we want to be safe with a couple of games to play and not be looking over the shoulder, relying on other results, etc. And I think the guys, if everyone plays their best and everyone does pull together, it's shown this week. You know, we beat Brighton and Hove. Brighton had played really well all season. They bowled us out for 180, and then we went and bowled Brighton out. So it shows we're capable. We did run Roffey very close.
Yes, I saw.
Just a few more on the board and we were home. And dry. And again, we posted a very big score against Middleton, 270 plus.
Yes.
Maybe at one stage it looked like he could have got the 300, but nonetheless, 270 obviously gives you max batting points. We just came across two obviously very good batters from Middleton that day.
club cricket, just like them in the World Cup and everything else that's going on at the moment, the 300 is no longer a frightening score, is it?
No.
It's quite extraordinary, really, when you think. Well, we wish you every success with the Premiership part. Now, this is an invidious question, but I'm going to ask you. Would you like to name some names to watch at Three Bridges? Who are your star players? Now, I realise that runs the risk of sins of omission, but we'll let you off that if you do.
Yeah, what can I say? I mean, I hate to massage his ego, but there's a typical chirpy little character behind the stumps, Joe Walker, who, on his day, very good batter. He seems to have been around forever with us, but still only just started uni, so I think there's a big future in it for Joe. We've had, I think they're now finished uni, but Matt Blandford, first team captain, Mike Rose, slow left armour, they've been out in New Zealand for the last winter, playing with our current overseas player, and you can see that they've had lots more cricket, different cricket.
That makes a big difference, doesn't it, when you've played abroad?
Absolutely.
I think as well, if you've got an overseas player who becomes a regular and becomes part of the club, then that really does open that door to people going the other way, doesn't it?
You said you've been chairman for 6 years. Mm-hmm. How long were you a member before you became chairman? Were you strong-armed into the position, or was it something that you wanted to do?
I think it was something that... Was I clamouring to do it? No.
Does any chairman clamour to do it?
Exactly. But no, the lad that did it for a couple of years, kind of family commitments, really couldn't carry on particularly. Asked if I wanted to and thought, actually, probably time's right for me.
Yeah.
I can't really say no. Happy to do it.
Yeah.
As long as you've
got a team around you.
You've got, and it's a very good committee.
Yeah. And I know David touched on it being onerous earlier on. The amount of work that you have to do, was it more or less than you thought it would be?
Having been on the committee for several years before that, you're kind of aware of what's going on. And obviously, you'd have more to do if you didn't have as capable a team around you. But having the excellent vice chair I've got, Jane Donnell, who deals with our club mark issues, she coordinates a lot of the Colts membership side, that's worth its weight in gold.
The Colts is thriving, is it? Big cult section.
It's good. It's not as high as it has been.
Right.
But I think, again, if you look at that, and Jane, ex-teacher, she'll tell you all about school age groups and that they rise 1 year, then they fall. And look at our cult section. It's kind of rising and falling in line with what you'd expect it to.
Really and truly, looking at Crawley, you've got quite a bit of competition for youngsters, haven't you? There's a lot of clubs in and around.
Yes. Which is good. I mean, it's bad in a way that we've got the competition because, obviously, you know, there's more clubs for the youngsters to play at. Equally, it's good that there is competition, that people talk cricket is a dying game.
Yep.
But great to see the clubs running cult sides and getting the cult down.
Do you find, you mentioned you were hitkeeper and a couple of others who are either going to uni or finish uni. Do you find that you struggle to lose players when they go away and don't come back, or do they generally go to uni, come back afterwards, no problem?
Genuinely, they're going and they're coming back on the whole. Maybe if it's final week before an exam or what have you, no. One guy particularly, who, apologies Archer, I forgot to mention you, but Archer Patel, off spinner, probably looking like our best bowler of the season, again, at uni, Loughborough, but coming back every week. Yeah.
And they don't also, I mean, some clubs, when we have representatives from some clubs in here, they come in and they will say that they can keep the Colts all the way up to sort of 18. Some of them, a large percentage of them, will go to uni and they just disappear off the face of the earth and never see them again. But you don't struggle from that.
And what so far has seemed, the uni guys, we haven't had any problem at all with, unless they've then maybe gone on to move away actually from the area, but they've not stopped playing cricket.
No.
I think, like any club, what you do have is you get to the end of whatever it might be, under 16, 17s, and that's when there's a natural fall off.
Yeah.
I've got a Saturday job, straightway precludes playing league cricket. And obviously, ourselves, we'd like to try and have enough to get that fourth team back, so it offers more of those kind of youngsters coming through, sort of guaranteed league cricket as well, rather than they drift off and play elsewhere.
Because I guess once they do come back from university, the chances are, as you say, unless they move away from the area, chances are they're going to play for you for however many years, as long as they want to carry on playing cricket. So it's just trying to, that difficult period, you say, when they get a job, when they go away to university, trying to keep that, the lifeblood of the club going, because it can be difficult. We've had, as I say, we've had clubs in here where youngsters are struggling to get youngsters in, but if you've got youngsters coming through, that's good news.
And what about women's cricket at Three Bridges, Adrian?
desperately trying to get it off the ground, but with kind of limited success. This year we have got a ladies softball tournament going on at the ground. We've got five or six teams involved in that. But I think if you talk to a lot of clubs, it's a really difficult thing to start. We've got a very good young lady, Keris, who's playing in the county setup. And she's been playing in the boys' underage group sides, mm-hmm. but then trying to get a girls' team for her to play, and it's tougher. So she's playing elsewhere, comes back, plays boys for us.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's certainly something that's on the up, and I think it's been a really exciting development in the in the top level, the international level of the game. As we said it would, Adrian, time has absolutely flown. Is there anything else about Three Bridges set up that you'd like to put across the airwaves of Susie 103.4?
I think anyone out there, I'll give it the big club advert. You know, we've got a team in the Prem. We're hoping to stay in the Prem. Second team is in Division 4, looking to return back to Division 3. We're running the third 11. They play Mid-Sussex, or the Mid-Sussex area. Yep. So not a lot of travelling. Love to get more players out there so we can get a fourth team going. So a bit of a plug for the club.
Brilliant. World Cup prediction?
Never knock Australia with a shout of winning it.
Did they win today, Tim?
Yeah.
Well, there we are.
I'd love to see us do it. But, yeah, you never know with Aussies.
Mm-hmm. Adrian Chappell, chairman of Three Bridges and our first contact on the show with the club. Thank you so much for coming to
Pleasure.
See us this
Thank
evening.
You.
And we hope you'll come back again soon.
Love to. Thank you.
It flies when you're having fun. That's the first hour of On the Front Foot this June edition. Well, this is your monthly cricket chat show here on Susie 103.4. Jim Grant's with us as our June pundit, and he'll be joining us full-time again at 8:30. Might be chipping in the next sector of the show. You've been listening to Adrian Chappell, the chairman of Three Bridges Cricket Club, and we're about to have Ian Dyson, who is the chair of Leatherhead. Welcome back to the second hour of June's On the Front Foot here at Susie 103.4. Our guest pundit this time around is Jim Grant. Tim Bowling's the other side of the panel. Well, we're moving towards a section of the show now, our third section, which is going to be pretty much the Tim Bowling show, because Tim's been a member at Leatherhead for a long time, and I'm delighted to say that the chair of Leatherhead Cricket Club, that's Ian Dyson, has now joined us. Ian, good evening, and a very warm welcome to Susie 103.4.
Good evening.
It's very good to see you here, and having offered you a warm welcome, I'm going to hand straight over to Tim.
Well, Ian, it's great for you to come in tonight. That's the first time we've met.
It is, yeah. Which you can't believe, frankly, but there you go.
I think I remember playing with your son in the third 11 in 2007 when he was, what, 13?
Yeah.
I think he made his debut. Was that his debut for the senior sides? He's first 11 captain now, isn't he? So he captains the first.
Yeah, it would have been 2006, 7, 12, 13. When
something
he made
like
his
that,
debut.
Wasn't it?
Yeah,
yes, yeah, I do remember that as a 13er. He's come on a long way. Anyway, how are you? All good?
All good, yeah. Yeah, season's started pretty well.
Yep.
So quite pleased with where we are. And we're getting three teams out, which is a key thing.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the Leatherhead was putting three teams out on a regular basis.
It was
four. And then it went down to three, and then unfortunately, two seasons ago, wasn't it, the third 11 unfortunately had to stop playing.
Yeah, you know, look, we had issues around availability, and one of the things when I took on the role of chair, which is about 18 months ago now, was really trying, you know, third 11 is key, because that's the way that youngsters transition into adult cricket, and you know that we lose a lot of youngsters because I mean, we can't offer them cricket, and there's lots of other distractions. So having a third 11, I think, is so important. So we're very keen to reinstate it, which we did. So we're in the Surrey Downs League, which is working nicely, because it's a slightly shorter format, 40 overs rather than 45-50 of the Surrey Championship. And we're having a nice blend of youngsters.
Yeah. I think you're right. Adults, it was a big thing getting the third 11 back to get the Colts through. As we just said, your son started playing, and he's come through to the first 11 captain now.
Yeah.
And it always used to have a high percentage of Colts in that side, which I guess it's done this season as well. Is it lots of Colts playing?
I'd say we're about 50-50 Colts, and you know, some members who haven't played in the last few years have come back, and some dads. So actually we've had about 10 to 12 dads of Colts who have signed up to be members as well, and so they're playing with their sons, which is perfect. So a combination of that, and plus we've got two T20 sides for the first time, so we entered the Surrey Slam. So we have a team in that, and again, that's great for youngsters playing cricket. And we have an over 40s T20 side as well, which is sort of the other end of the spectrum, but that's great.
That's
more informal, so there's four clubs that we've all agreed to play each other home and away, and you know, it's a lot of fun. So a lot more cricket at Leatherhead, which is you know, a key thing. You know, we've got to offer our members opportunities.
Has the Surrey Slam been a success for the club as well as for those involved? Has it attracted audiences?
Yes. I mean, we've had three games, and in the league format, it's a round robin, so there's four, two of which have been at Leatherhead, and we've had a few people down buying a beer or two. So it's very, you know, it's coloured clothing, and it's the usual T20, and it's good. And again, it's vital. You cannot ignore, you know, T20. I mean, there's a lot of people who would say, traditionalists, who would say, oh, you know, I don't want T20, I want the longer form. But you have to offer both, in my view. I mean, it's again, the way to keep youngsters involved in the game is T20, and people haven't got the time these days just to play weekend cricket over the longer format. So offering T20 is vital.
Well, we've had Matt Camp in several times, haven't we, from the Surrey Slam, and he's done a fantastic
phenomenal job
getting that tournament up to the profile that it is now. I mean, what is it, 60 or 70 odd sides in Surrey now? And
I think it's more. I think it's 72 in the midweek, and then there's a Sunday slam as well.
That's right,
and and as we look at next year, I mean, I quite like, whether we'll be able to do it, I'm not sure, but I quite like to have two sides in it. I don't see any reason why not. And again, just more opportunities for people to play cricket.
And it's Leatherhead Swans, am I right about that?
Correct,
And colours?
The colours are the club colours, which is maroon and blue.
Because Matt Camp was moaning the fact that too many clubs want to be called the Swans. He was saying that the logos they have to keep coming up with for every side that wants to be called the Swans.
Yeah, I think it's fairly, pretty legitimate for us, given our crest and everything else.
We suggested Signets, didn't we? Might be one way around. Jim, one of the things that's always puzzled me slightly about coloured clothing, whether it's at school level, club level, or up to international pro level, I've never really understood. How long has it been going, coloured clothing? 20, 30, whatever?
Yeah. Well, Packer started it.
Late 70s.
And Surrey have played about two seasons in brown clothing.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? They had that horrible red and royal blue and red thing, didn't they, for a while?
And then they've got this sort of ice blue and chocolate that they play in now.
At least there is a bit of chocolate
that
brown.
That is something that I just never understood.
Really.
And I'm delighted that Leatherhead are playing in the club's colours.
I suppose chocolate brown's less appealing as a kind of an entire kit, really, isn't it? I just think it's a nice trim, but I'm not sure.
Well, New Zealand shied away from playing in black for a while.
They were
the Beige Brigade. Thirty years ago, in the last round robin tournament, there we are. So that's the Swans, and that's the T20. Yeah, I think Ian, one thing that we quite often say on this show is that people are so carried away with T20 that they forget. I mean, there were Jim and I 30 years ago playing regular 20-over staff matches after school against local clubs.
I'm playing one tomorrow. So there you go.
And the old Decker Cup, the 15. Eight ball overs in Surrey, so it's a little bit of a reinvention of the wheel, but obviously in terms of time taken. Now, I'm not even going to mention the 100 tonight, Tim.
We're not big fans of the 100. So
Ian, is Division 1 the right level for the club at the moment as far as first team are concerned?
I think it probably is. We narrowly missed out on promotion last year. Literally, it went to the last half hour of the season. Isha had to beat Guildford and looked like they were going to lose. But I think you know, the Premiership is a big step up, and Leatherhead were in it 3-4 years ago for two seasons, which was a remarkable achievement actually for the club. And, you know, we held our own, but it's a different level, and particularly, you know, the top four or five teams, the Reigates,
yeah,
the Weybridges,
the big clubs, so aren't they?
The big clubs, you know, they'll have contracted pros playing. Reigate this year, I've got Jake Lehman, right? I mean, he was playing, and he's playing for Lancashire. So, you know, it's a tough step up. And I think for us, having not had a great season in 2017, where we were sort of lower mid-table, I think to really show progression, which we did last year, and to be knocking on the door, we were in the top three throughout the season and just kind of missed out, was really encouraging. But actually staying in that league and consolidating is a good thing, I think, for us this year.
You're absolutely right about the top of the top. I mean, Priory are actually just losing Michael Burgess because he can't get all the cricket he wants at Hove, so he's going to either Worcestershire or Warwickshire. So Michael Burgess is on his way up the road. But then you look around the next 5 minutes and Rhys Topley is playing in the Priory first team this year. It was something that, I mean, we always hark back to the time when Ian Bishop bowled there for a season and nobody could catch him at slip because it was just shelling like rockets. But yes, I do take your point. Funnily enough, having said that, you know, we've just had Adrian from Three Bridges who've got back in the Sussex Premiership, and you've got big sides like Bexhill and Littlehampton languishing down in Division 3, Division 4, not doing terribly well. Littlehampton have amalgamated, and Hastings and St Leonard's Priory are now in Division 2.
It's amazing how it turns around. It's some of the traditional clubs not quite at the top at the moment, but those big clubs like Reigate, etc., always seem to be there, don't they?
But yeah, Maldon Wanderers, who actually were playing on Saturday, would be a good example of a club that's always been in the Premiership, but were in Division 2 last year and last couple of years and got promotion. So we always enjoy playing them, so that's Saturday.
Well, I suppose, Jim, the Manchester Uniteds and the Liverpools of this world have played below the top flight, not to mention West Ham.
Well, yes, that's true.
the team that hasn't very much is Everton, and I'm an Everton supporter, and they have the record. You see, that only four seasons below the top division. There you
that's
go.
Right.
So,
yes,
I had to get that in.
You know, it's amazing how microphones enhance accents. I thought you might not be from around here by origin. Adrian was talking about Southport Cricket Club,
wasn't he, on the last
half hour.
Well, played there
show.
Many times.
Really?
I was in. They were in the same league as well. You don't want to know about Northwest cricket.
Craig Stevenson from Tadworth. Another.
That's right.
I won't say Northerner. That sounds disparaging, but not from round here.
Yeah.
What's the speaking now as an umpire who's laid his white coat on one side now, Ian? What's the behaviour like in Division One?
I think generally good. Of course, you have the odd moments, and we had one or two last year. But I think generally good. And it's something as a club. You know, Adam, obviously, my son, who's club captain, he has to take the lead. And I think we take it very seriously in terms of on-field behaviour. I mean, of course, you want to win and it's competitive. But generally, I think behaviours are good.
I think it's probably got better. Certainly, I mean, I've not done any school first team cricket now for 4 or 5 years. But there was a time, about 2005, Jim, where, I mean, I'm sure Tav wouldn't have put up with it. But behaviour in some school games round here was absolutely
dreadful. We had some incidents definitely, and I think you're right. I think if possibly it's sort of past its peak as a problem in school cricket anyway.
I always felt it was very important for umpires to have real empathy, because especially 16, 17, 18 year olds, a lot of the time they do get cross with themselves and they are swearing at themselves.
And you've got to judge that, right, haven't you? You can't be just a total stickler. You've got to, you know, let people
not an easy thing to judge, whereas third man yelling at 130 decibels is very easy to judge indeed when the bowler's running in, you know. I raised the point partly because in the paper I understand, and I know the poor chap had an absolutely dreadful game, and England, having steamrolled Pakistan, duly went and lost, which we'll talk about later on. But I was a little bit surprised. I mean, Jason Roy is obviously quite a volatile chap, to see that he had been fined 15% of his match fee for swearing at himself.
Well, that's what you're you're saying, Jim, isn't it? Sometimes it's, I think if you're swearing at yourself, it's one thing. If you're swearing at the umpire or other players, fair dues. But it's because you're out of frustration. I think it's a bit harsh, really.
Maybe where money's involved, there's got to be, it's got to be black and white. I don't know. Favourite oppositions, not just in Division 1 now, Ian, but around and about the place, and favourite places to play at? Who's good fun to play against in your son's experience, perhaps?
I think, like, the most of the teams.
That's good.
I think the general, he knows, because he was in the Surrey system.
Yeah, yeah.
So he talks about Michael Burgesson and Rhys Tupley, the same year as them, and he played with them a lot through. So he knows a lot of people. So, I think when you build up those relationships, and now, I mean, he's played first team cricket since he was 15. Yeah, so, yeah. I think generally the spirit's good. I mean, I think it's still a beer after the match, and so Normandy is a ground that we haven't played at for a while because obviously they've been in the Prem, they've come down, and that's obviously always a lovely
place
to go and visit.
Yeah.
So enjoy that.
Well, they benefit from the fact they've got two pitches, don't they, in the grounds.
Yeah.
They can play a first game 11 and a third 11 game on the same day, and then get everybody back into the clubhouse. So
No, it's Spencer. I always enjoy going. I mean, it's not everywhere. It's because it's difficult to get to. But I think that's a nice place to watch cricket as well. And there's some good grounds and good teams to play, and it's a good league to be in.
What about your own ground? Does the club own the ground, and are you able to take total responsibility for what goes on?
We have a long lease, so we have a lease till 2068.
So effectively, the answer is yes.
Yeah. Actually, we're developing it at the moment, so we have a piece of land adjacent to the ground, which is unused by and large, and we're doing a deal to take that and create a training facility. So we're going to build a new four-bay net facility. We have planning for that, and so that'll happen, touch wood, assuming we can get the funding sorted, which we're well on the way. That'll happen over the autumn, so that'll improve our facilities hugely. We have two nets at the moment, but but these are obviously a brand new four-bay, fully enclosed, state-of-the-art. And the thing that it does, as much as anything, it gives us greater flexibility in terms of using the main ground. So, for example, if we have Tuesdays, we have adult training, so clearly we can't have a Colts game on. Next year, we'll be able to have adult training in the nets and have a Colts game on. So we'll be able to, again, use the ground more. We have to rent out grounds, and that costs us and everything. So I think better facilities and greater flexibility in terms of using the ground. So, we're in
the third 11 plays at Ockham.
Yeah, so it was a nice arrangement. When we looked at where we should position the third 11, the Surrey Downs League became attractive to us because it's a shorter format, and again, we wanted to encourage youngsters, and a shorter format suited them. And Ockham are in that league, and we'd actually use their ground quite a lot for Colts games, and so we chatted with them and came up with an arrangement, basically, where that's our home ground. So the league was happy to organise it such that, we were alternate home and away.
Was there any thought of merging? Because I know, obviously, Leatherhead and Cobham merged back in 2005-06, I think it was, which didn't really work out for the club in the end, I guess. Was there talk? Did you think about trying to merge with Ockham, or was it just a case of using the ground?
No, it was just a natural thing. They have one side, so they have a ground which is free every other weekend, and we needed it. So it was a perfect arrangement, and it's great there because it's a nice little ground, and the clubhouse is manned, the tees are organised, so because one of the when you play 13 grade, trying to organise the tees is one of the things, but that's all sorted. So for our home fixtures for the thirds, again, it's been a helpful thing to have to reintroduce that team.
Ockham not on your radar either?
No, I never played at Ockham.
I've played there with Keith Briggs when they were still playing full time on Sundays, and I did a bit of very handily placed for a panic stricken dash upon being dismissed straight across the road to that extraordinarily strangely shaped pub called the Oh Boy or Tall Boy.
Oh Boy.
And the Black Swan is just up the road, which is even nicer now that the bikers aren't there anymore. So lovely little ground, but there's donkeys here since I've been there now. You've obviously, reading your newsletter, Ian, you've obviously got a pretty thriving social scene. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, it's a sociable club. A lot of the people that have been there some time, a lot of the younger guys have come up through the cult section together. So it was a good camaraderie, good atmosphere. Last year we had a number of events. We had a race night, we had a wine night, we had a Midsummer Madness party. We do as much as we can. And it's it's to get, obviously, get the members together, have a bit of fun, but it's also fundraising for the club. I mean, it's, you know, taking money behind the bar, and these sorts of events are vital for any community club. I mean, you know, we're not exactly awash with cash. So again, it's important.
It's been done up, hasn't it, recently, the clubhouse?
We reconfigured it, so we created a separate scorers box, which we didn't have before. We reconfigured the umpires room, which has a private entrance now where it didn't before. New furniture, new TV, new barbecue, new bench, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's you're obviously limited in terms of how much you can do, but it's a much nicer feel. I think people are enjoying it, we've already had a couple of events down there. We've got more coming up. We're going to repeat race night. We're going to repeat wine night. We've got a big thing. Obviously, you'll know the ECB are really pushing the World Cup, and all clubs are being encouraged to have a World Cup weekend. We're doing ours on a slightly different day. It's the weekend of the 21st, 2nd and 3rd. So with a number of events going on there, including on the Sunday, it'll be a family day where we'll have sort of six, eight-a-side youth cricket and stalls and bouncy castle and barbecues and that sort of thing. And again, it's for the members, but also for the community. And I think it's very important. All clubs need to probably be a bit more welcoming to the community.
Is that when you took over as chairman, was that one of the things you sort of targeted? You wanted to try and open it up more to the Leatherhead community?
Definitely. Yeah. I think it's important in a number of ways. We're not engaged enough with local schools, and we need to do more on that. And I think when we have the new net facility, that's something definitely we'll push on and allow them to use the facilities. We weren't really engaged with local businesses, and we've done a lot of work in that regard in terms of sponsorship and commercial arrangements with local businesses. So our main sponsor, for example, is Unilever, is Persil, whose UK headquarters are in Leatherhead. Yeah. So it was an obvious thing. Yeah. So I think engaging there and just increasing the visibility of the club and doing more and get a bit. We then need to think about the off season, and the club isn't used in the off season. And so you have an asset there, and it's a nice clubhouse, and it could be used. So again, that's something that we need to look at, because that's great for the club, because it brings revenue and commercial income into the clubs, helps us sustain. But it's also a facility that the communities are short on facilities like that, whether it's for Pilates or dance classes or whether it's for bridge or whatever it is. We haven't used our clubhouse, and that's something we're definitely looking to do over the coming winter.
It's the reverse, Tim, at Burgess Hill, where the clubhouse is a municipal building, and therefore the boot is firmly on the other foot.
Yeah.
But as you say, and if you've got premises of your own, it's an incredible asset, I think. In terms of engaging with the community in Leatherhead, over the years in my professional capacity, I had a lot to do with Adrian Gale at St John's Leatherhead.
Yeah.
And one of the things that he did, actually through the 40 Club, was to run a T20 tournament for the local state schools so that they could get involved and use St John's facilities, which are clearly pretty good. So, I'm sure that's absolutely the right way to go.
Yeah, and funnily enough, we've talked to St John's. St John's are one of our sponsors.
Yeah.
And they have an outreach programme where they engage with local schools, and we've talked to them about doing it jointly with them next year, because what they miss when they do that is so they can give sessions and coaching, but then there's no follow through in the sense of, so we'd be the follow through, i.e. the kids who come and enjoy it and want to do more, well, they join our club. So again, more of that required, I think, and having the new facilities next year will give us a better platform to do
yeah.
that.
Mm. I had a lot of time for St John's cricket, and I mean, Adrian's been a good friend of mine for a very long time, 40 club and all the rest of it. The one thing I would say about Adrian when he was doing the first team at St John's was that in that particular instance, Jim, it was a thoroughly good thing that overs cricket was introduced because they were notorious not losers in days
yes.
long gone by.
Yeah.
And that could become a little bit difficult. But no, great friend of mine, very great friend of mine, and good to see. It's amazing. I don't know whether we actually said on air, Tim, that time was going to fly, but
yeah,
time has duly flown.
Yes.
Ian, anything else? Any other kites you'd like to fly about Leatherhead Cricket Club while you're with us?
No, I think it's a long-established club. I think we had a little bit of a blip we talked about,
yeah.
you know, only
yeah.
having two sides out, two senior sides. Obviously, we had a Sunday side is not good enough, and I think, yeah, I really feel that we've got good momentum behind us. We've got the third 11, we've got the T20. Colts is about, you know, the same number as last year. Girls is something we have about 12 girls out of the 160. That's something we really want to target more. And again, the new facilities will help. We'd love to have a girls team in time. It's kind of difficult, and we've got to you know, walk before we run, but that's something for the future. But I think there's a lot we can do to really push the club forward, and the community aspects of things. I think it's really important.
I'm biased because I'm a member, but I do think what is very good now is the fact that the communication with the members has become very good. There's lots of I haven't played this season, and I haven't been down to the club, but I know. I will come down, but I feel like I know what's going on because there's regular emails from you. There's regular emails from Jim Gregg, who's the membership secretary, isn't he? And I think it's very important to try and, as you said, try and keep everybody involved, get the community involved.
Yeah.
And that way you just keep the club going and generate more members and just... we went through a little blip. All clubs go through little blips.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate. And I think at the time it was the right thing to do to maybe fold the third 11 as it was and then give it a couple of years and wait till you were ready and then restart it, which is what you've done.
Yeah.
And that hopefully will feed through to the seconds and firsts.
Yeah.
And it will... go back to where they were. You never know, in time might have four Saturday sides again, so you know, you look
great,
at all the different sides you've got. I think it's doing really well, so it's good that you've obviously got hold of it and pushing it forward.
Tim, regular communication in any organisation is essential for proper involvement and teamwork, isn't it?
Exactly,
and, and if that extends to the community, so much the better.
Exactly.
Ian Dyson, chairman of Leatherhead Cricket Club, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you with us on the front foot this Thursday evening, and hope very much that you'll come back and see us again and report on progress.
I'll happily do that, and thanks for inviting me.
We'll look forward to it.
Thank you.
Well, after our guests have moved on and Jim Grant has moved back up to the main desk, gentlemen, the thing I forgot to mention, and I know we were really shoehorning it into a very small amount of time at the end of our first section, the other thing that happened last Saturday was a little football match in Madrid.
Yes, indeed. What a game that was if you were a Liverpool fan. No doubt Ian kept quiet about that. Do you notice that? As an Everton fan, he said nothing.
Yes, quite so. But anyway, there we were, and it is extraordinary, isn't it, that on the first Saturday of June, for heaven's sake, poor old cricket, World Cup or no World Cup, is competing against all of that. Now, I must mention, we have played it before, Tim, but the track we just played, Put Some Soul in It, was Mark Butcher of Surrey in England.
And
you were you were a fan of his dad's when you were
England. He was one of my, you know, I spent far too much of my youth at the Oval in the 70s, and I loved that Surrey. They didn't win a lot, but I really loved that Surrey side in the 70s, and Jeff Howarth and Graham Roop and Intercarb and all that lot. Robin Jackman, I loved watching a lot. But I really, really loved Alan Butcher, who sort of took over from John Edrich as left-handed opener.
Yes.
And on his day was a really destructive opening batsman. He could really take attacks apart. And he got his one chance really with England in that funny test against India in 79 where about three or four players had their debut. Paul Parker, I think, played in that game, and Bairstow kept wicket. Bairstow. He got in both innings. He got, I think, 19 and 20, and he got in both innings, and Never got going. Missed the plane, therefore didn't get put, and then never got looked at again.
Yes. Mm.
So it was a one test wonder.
Did you ever? Have you read his book? He's written about his time in Zimbabwe as
no,
as
I
coach.
Haven't. No,
I haven't read it yet, but it's meant to be. The reviews I've read,
I bet,
meant to be very because he very yeah. fond memories of. Yeah. I mean, that was under some trying circumstances yeah. being coach over there.
Yeah.
But the book. From the reviews I've read, it sounds like it's a very interesting yeah. take on.
Well, in those days, you know, it's particularly when you used to go down for the games in Guildford,
mm.
where you're right in amongst the players
yes.
and so on. You used to, you know, get to meet your heroes mm. and talk to them a bit, and he always came across as a really nice
yeah.
man.
Mm.
It's
yeah.
interesting, isn't it, that Mark Butcher said that when he suffered his dip in form and was out of the England side, it was his dad he went back to sort his batting out.
It's interesting, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So so that worked. I'm a Mark Butcher fan.
Yeah, I like Mark.
I know he's
agree.
A freelance rather than top draw Sky commentator. The prophecy has finally come to pass as well, Tim. I see Botham is giving the Sky commentary away after the Ashes.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh dear, I didn't know that.
So, and as I said to you, when I was listening to Gower the other week at the RAC, he said to Dagnall, "Well, I might be looking for a job on TMS."
Oh, well,
so it's been touted for a couple of years.
I wonder whether Botham felt he was being maybe slightly edged out of the door, and he felt to jump before you pushed. I mean, I think that's a real shame. I think Botham still got a lot to offer.
He's running Durham County Cricket Club as well, mind.
Yeah.
So he's got stuff to do.
Mm.
But I like Mark Butcher in the way that I like Rob Key.
Yeah.
In that, man of the people, that sounds a horrible thing to say, but you know what I mean. Mark Butcher is very much one of us, South London or Croydon. And
Mark Butcher is a member, or used to be a member, at, I think it's old Midwickgiftian.
Yeah, he was at Trinity School.
And he often used to come to the game. When I played third 11 for Leatherhead, and obviously they've got two pitches there, and we play in the far pitch, he'd often be in the clubhouse there when the first were playing on the other pitch and wander around both pitches.
I think you'd find Butch in the clubhouse with... some regularity,
yeah,
but I do like him on the broadcasting, just to come to the World Cup, if you like, by way of the broadcasting. I've watched a fair bit of it. It feels as if it's been going on forever, and yet it's just been a week in actual fact. But there is, to me, a noticeable difference between the ICC commentary and presentation, and I'm sitting there this last week thinking to myself, how lucky we are to have the Sky Sports team doing. I know not everybody can have it, and that's a bone of contention if you've not got the satellite or cable, but the actual standard of broadcasting, I think, with the Sky team,
they are good, aren't they?
Yes.
And I think they themselves were brought up on Benno and Laker and the Test Match Special, so they don't fill the airwaves with endless chatter. They talk more than those guys do, but there's a measured pace to the way they deal with it, and some things are nicely understated.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I do feel the kind of the Asian subcontinent style of commentary is just to fill space with words
and hyperbolic words at that.
It's
been very noticeable. I think Tim and I were corresponding during the week about this show, and I did say at one point, if another ICC commentator forces the diversity of England and Wales down my throat, I shall throw things at the television. I mean, I was brought up in Brixton when the Jamaican community was really getting going in Brixton in the 50s. I don't need anybody from some TV production company to tell me that this country has been diverse since William the Conqueror and probably before that, and the Huguenots and all these things.
Unfortunately, there's an awful lot of virtue signalling in all walks of life these days, I'm afraid. But
it's exactly what it is. Perhaps we'll get round to... Don Topley being no platformed in the next show because I think we probably ought to turn our attention to the World Cup. But can we do that by way of today's results, Tim, if you've got
them
there?
Yes, let me find them. Yes, well, Australia obviously playing the West Indies today. Australia were 288 all out And then West Indies responded. They were 273 for 9. Australia win by 15 runs.
Close game.
Yeah, it was a close game. I think I managed to watch a little bit of it, some of the Australian stuff when I was at work with a little screen on my desk. And from what I saw of it, it looked to me initially like the West Indies were well on top. I think that Australia were 89 for 5 off about 23 overs or something.
That's about the score when I came in here to set this show up at 12:30.
I think the West Indies let that go a little bit, didn't they, really?
But Smith was still there, you see.
Yeah, and he got 73 in the end. That's
and Colter Nile got 90. 92,
yeah.
9 or 10?
I think they said he was batting at, I think he was batting at number 8, and I think they said it was the record score. No one's ever scored a, I don't know whether it's a World Cup century or an ODI century at number 8. The record is held apparently by Chris Wokes, scored 95.
Yeah, I remember, yeah, I was going to say.
And this Colter Nile, who I don't know much about, I have to be honest, he got 92. He was furious when he got out. He tried to hit, can't remember who was bowling, hit one back down and got caught on the boundary, and you could see he was furious with himself for getting out.
He is their white ball specialist, isn't he? Whereas Stark and Cummins play all formats.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I was rooting for the West Indies. I always have a soft spot for the West Indies. I thought if they'd have won this game, I think that they would have been well on top and one of the favourites to win this tournament.
They've got firepower, haven't they, in terms of the bowling.
But
you
short
worry
stuff.
About Gale's fitness across the whole tournament.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they do need...
And it's a long tournament as well, isn't it?
So I'd worry about Gale's fitness over 50 overs in the field.
Well, he doesn't move a lot.
Carry him in the field,
I was going to say, he doesn't move a lot in the field. I did see one fielding move he picked up and threw it in, and he got a big cheer from the crowd, because I think it's very rare that he moves across the pitch like that.
Then again, he could tee off and get a double 100.
Oh, he can win them again
at the vital moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
The very little bit that I saw in between the afternoon stroll and coming back to do this was... Andre Russell, or Dre Russ as the IPL has it, absolutely throwing it away by trying to play like the IPL.
Yeah,
and they only needed something like 5 and over, or even less, with 5 out.
That's right. They could have just pushed it around and they'd have had no problem. They just tried to go.
Holder was the other end, trying to calm him down, and in the end, up in the air it went off a big outside edge. And Glenn Maxwell took a superb catch running back. Can I just rein you in away from the World Cup again for a second, though? What's been going on with well, we know about Sussex because that finished yesterday, but what are the Sussex and Surrey scores?
Well, the Surrey Somerset today finished with Somerset winning by 102 runs. Somerset scored 344 in the first innings. Surrey then scored 231. Somerset's second innings 153, so they were well reduced there. Unfortunately, Surrey came in, couldn't quite make it. They're all out for 164.
They're not going to repeat the trick this year, are they?
No, they're not.
It's a real shame there.
They lost their last 8 for 46 runs.
That's right.
And Jack Brooks, who was at Yorkshire, is that right, guy with the headband?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Seam bowler, took 5 for 33.
I mean, that result puts Somerset back on top. They were second to Hampshire at the start of the day. They go back on top now. Somerset have now got 96 points. Hampshire got 81 points. Surrey languishing 6th, out of 8 on 43 points and haven't won yet. So,
it's weird, isn't it?
I think the crucial thing there was that Rory Burns was out overnight.
Yeah, he scored 48 runs in the second innings.
He was out last night.
Yeah.
And assuming that things go well in the middle distance, then Rory Burns is also going to be missing from the second
half of
Surrey's campaign because there'll be the Ashes test.
Yeah.
But he's not got great form coming in today, has he? And it's interesting. Well, I mean, we've obviously, probably not got time to talk about the forthcoming Ashes, but top order runs for England remain a problem, which is why I've always wondered why they haven't given Roy a chance.
Yeah, well, we've said this, haven't we, before? We've talked about this.
Let's give him the benefit, because Keaton Jennings is not exactly scoring.
I think
the one who's titanic in the county championship is Gary Balance.
Yes, that's right.
But then again, do you
we've
go
been
back?
There, haven't
when
we? Found
that is,
been there.
Yeah, I think he's been found wanting, and
I think you've got to stick with Rory Burns. I mean, we've banged the drum for Rory Burns for probably about a season and a half before he was called up.
Well, his numbers are good. I mean, you've got 1,000 runs, 5 or 6 years
he's
running, decent average. Yeah, and that's what's obviously put them off selecting him. He's got some ticks, hasn't he? But
I just think he is a proper test batsman. Yeah, I think give him time, I think he will flourish in the test arena.
Now, Tim, when I wrote the notes for this show only a couple of days ago, Sussex were indeed mid-table, but since then, Stian van Zyl, who's yet another Colpack, has scored a mountain of runs. Middlesex have been marmalised.
That's right.
I think Sussex are second tonight.
Yeah, Sussex are third, actually. Oh, okay. They're 1 point off second place. They finished yesterday against Middlesex, as you say. They won by an innings and 50 runs. Van Zyl, 173. Brown, 108. Beer, 50 not out. They had a good win against Middlesex, and that put them now third. They were second, but Lancashire, who were third, have jumped to the top of that league. At Lancashire, 85 points. Glamorgan, 74. Sussex, 73. So Sussex are just off second place there, but that was a good win. Good win for Sussex.
Lancs can't seem just to get themselves established in the top division, can they?
It's strange.
Up, down.
I mean, they drew yesterday with Leicestershire. They drew today with Leicestershire, Lancashire. So, they're top by what are they, 11 points. But
Go one of two ways here. Let's return to Somerset after I've just asked you whether we've got a result yet from the women's ODI, or is that still going?
I think we have got a result. I've got to try and find my notes.
Jim and I will talk a little bit about the Royal London Cup in that case for a moment, because Somerset at last, and deservedly always the bridesmaid. And they've replaced Hampshire, I think, at the top of Division 1 as well. So Hampshire sort of Somerset kind of level in a way there. But good for Somerset. What do you think, Jim, about the last Lords final? And Trent Bridge have got the final. And the fact, I've got to mention it now, the fact that in future the Royal London, the 50-over competition, in spite of this wonderful England side that we've now developed, it is going to be a purely development side with all the star players in the 100 alongside.
Very curious. I don't understand. There's no logic to this strategy, is there? They seem to be just tying themselves in knots strategically.
Mm-hmm.
I've been on this program before, and we've talked about the way in which the natural rhythms of the cricket season that we grew up with have been utterly disrupted over a period of time. And just when you felt, well, maybe we are just settling into, the 2020 in the middle of the season and the championship framing it and still having a one-day competition at a sensible time. That's now all gone out of the window as well. I mean, I can remember, the you used to have the Benson and Hedges Cup, which I think was a bit of a kind of an odd beast.
Yeah.
But the Gillette Cup at Lords was the kind of,
it was the FA Cup,
you
wasn't
look
it?
Forward to it. It was used to go to it.
It was like the FA Cup
ticket
final.
And blag a ticket outside, sit on the grass at Lords.
That's right.
And it felt like a festive culmination of a season. Sometimes, that 60-over format was problematic. It used to start at 10:30 and all used to swing all over the place at Lords. But
that's worth remembering, in actual fact. I mean, until it was all rationalised to a global 50-over format. Gillette was 60 and the Benson and Hedges were 55.
That's right,
And then you had proper intervals. So you had lunch and tea rather than a kind of just a break between the innings. I think the 50-over format is for what it is, it's okay, and it works well in those international games. And there've already been some, I mean, they're low profile games between teams that are not going to threaten to win the tournament. But I enjoyed the Afghan run chase.
And
New Zealand nearly messed up against Bangladesh, didn't they? And
unfortunately for those smaller sides, the format in the World Cup this year lends itself to the best, which is nothing wrong with that in the sense that the best side should qualify for the semi final. You haven't got a situation where you're in four different groups, and if you happen to get the horror group, you're in trouble. Whereas a lesser team might sneak through.
I
think the only downside of the format now is that if you start losing a few games, South Africa
they've got to win almost every game.
They will have to
now,
win every game from now on. And that's the only downside is that it could put
teams
off.
So I think there are going to be some pretty dead, meaningless games at the back end of this tournament, involving some quite big teams as well, not just you know, your Afghan, Assam, and Bangladeshis.
Yeah. Poor old South Africa, you know, they are an ageing side without their two greatest ageing stars, because de Villiers has retired.
Stain,
I would imagine, will retire now because his shoulder's given way. Du Plessis is 34.
Yes.
So, and Ambler's 35.
Well,
so
I'm not sure Dumini's any sprint chicken either.
They really are in transition, and you just wonder, because there is an element, isn't there, in this World Cup? Some of the, let's say, less capable sides already. I mean, what was today, the eighth game? Something like the eighth game out of 40 odd. And, you know, already you've had several sides not batting their overs.
No.
And, and if that is the beginning of the very short format feeding through, that we actually struggle to bat for 50 overs because we're used to 20 and that's what we'll do.
Well, and that I think that's exactly right. That's the problem with T20 cricket. It will impact now on those overs.
And there's a kind of assumption that sort of 350 is almost par in a 50 over game, but actually in World Cup games over you know, that's a pretty high score. I mean, that 348 that England were chasing would have been the highest
ever
in a World Cup game.
And
you've got a lot of the game starting early, and the ball will swing a bit in England in Nibiran. So
it was swinging today. I mean, the first ball today.
Now maybe, you know, 280, 290 is possibly nearer what the par in the tournament is going to be. And, you know, you've got to have batsmen who can stay there and build innings. It's not just
Afghanistan,
off from the word go.
Afghanistan, bless them, who've been brought up on T20 and nothing else, started with three slips yesterday. And good for them, you know. That's Shane Warne-esque, isn't it?
Yes.
So, having almost drifted into the World Cup, let's stick with the World Cup. Apart from poor old South Africa, it's a pretty level playing field. I mean, Australia have clearly put down a marker today, Tim.
Yeah, I was surprised, I have to say. I mean, I said earlier on, watching the initial stages of the Australian innings, it looked like they were really on the back foot and not going to get going. I think West Indies continued this policy of short pitch bowling again, which you know has worked well against Pakistan, but unfortunately whilst it started off, as you said, Jim, the ball was swinging around earlier on. The movement started to die a little bit, and the ball was sitting up, and it was getting hit by Australia. And then the West Indies threw it away. I think if the West Indies had won today, I genuinely think they would have been one of the favourites for this tournament. But I think there's a bit of a setback for them today.
I think New Zealand stuttered, obviously, but I think they thought they had that game won. I think there was a bit of complacency crept in. There were some lazy shots.
Indeed,
I think they're a darn good side.
Yeah,
I think. I'd have them, you know, I think they'll make the top four.
But then you still could end up with any one of six or seven winning this. I mean, do you discount Bangladesh totally? I don't think so, necessarily.
No, I don't think you can. But I mean, you look back to when Sri Lanka won the World Cup. Sri Lanka would have been the equivalent at that time of Bangladesh.
Well, when India first won,
to be honest, if you go back that far,
in 83, you know, they just had these little, you know, wobbly seamers,
and nobody thought back then that the West Indies weren't going to win that tournament for a third time running. So
something that interested me, and it was Bob Willis who put me straight, at least I as far as what I understood him to say, I couldn't quite understand, with 10 teams on the roster, why South Africa were playing their third game against India playing their first. Willis said that the BCCI insisted that India have a 3-week break because the IPL had finished late.
I heard something about corporate package deals and something as well. So I think they are really calling the shots now.
Tail wagging the dog, Willis said.
Really, I think he's right. And it doesn't, you know, the logic of that first series of games should have been.
Everybody plays the first round effectively.
So it was very, very weird, you know. And it wasn't as though players from other teams haven't been in the IPL. So
They do have. As you say, they do have a stranglehold now on control of cricket. They changed all the rules, didn't they, a couple of years ago, as to which tests they had to play, and it was much more centralised into the big teams playing each other rather than the outlying test-playing nations.
I think you can see, really, in terms of the kind of profile and advertising that it's had here, not on terrestrial television. The highlights package is about 12:30 at night.
Yeah.
And I've no doubt out there it's wall to wall stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you must know, be. You know, yeah.
I do feel. Wasn't there something about how they're doing all the merchandising of it's the ICC whatever doing all the shirt merchandising whatever, and they ran out of shirts at some of the grounds and that kind of thing. So it's all a little bit.
Yeah. But there we are. And I think the other thing that you're talking about 65 overs when the Gillette Cup started 1963, and it was something like 183 played 165. Those are not exact figures in 65 overs, and whether it was 65, 60, or 55, nobody scored 481 before.
I think
England. Say what you like, and poor old Jason Roy had an absolute shocker, which really didn't help. But I think if you really pare it down to the bone, England thought all they'd got to do was turn up at Trent Bridge, especially, having rolled Pakistan over. But Pakistan without Wahab Rehaz, without Mohammad Amir, and without, is he Shadab Khan of the spin bowler? Well, a horse of a very different colour. And I have to say that I have a sneaking bit of satisfaction for poor old Safraz, the captain and wicket keeper, who looked at his wits' end.
Yes, he did,
during that warm-up series. Poor chap. And there it is. What do we think? Amazingly, we've got about 3 minutes. What do we think about England thus far?
Well, I think we did well in the first game. I think, unfortunately, we came up against a Pakistan side which hadn't won for about 11 ODIs.
Yeah, they were a cornered tiger.
Exactly right, a cornered tiger, as Imran Khan said way back when. And I think, as usual with Pakistan, you never know who's going to turn up. They were due a win. We were too complacent, as you said, and I'm just glad that we made the mistake at this point in the tournament.
I think when I thought against South Africa, I thought the team was a machine. I mean, I thought that they didn't play their best.
No, they dodged half a bullet, South Africa.
Yeah, they did, but fielding performance was extraordinary.
Ben Stokes's catch?
Amazing.
Well, yeah, but, you know, how often in club cricket do you say, stay on the bloody boundary? Walk in! And he almost made a terrible mistake, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly right. It's just...
The talent to get it out. It reminded me, years ago, this is very domestic, but of a catch that a young Hilton took in front of the pavilion on the field at Reigate. He took it's one of the best catches I've seen a kid take. Absolutely brilliant. Very, very similar. Up one hand.
The one I thought of, you may remember it, Jim, and I couldn't tell you who we were playing against, but Greggy at Lords, nursery end sight screen, leapt about 2 feet off the ground, 6 foot seven, plus his arm, and took it one-handed on the sight screen. Was the one that I thought of. But, a very fine fielding performance. And then the wheels came off with that a bit too against Pakistan, didn't they?
Yeah, everything went wrong, didn't it, really, in that particular game.
And perhaps just a little hint of, let's get the handbags out and kick in the turf. And
I think there's a lot they've
still
learnt.
Still had two bats and get hundreds, didn't we? I mean, I still think... we let it go in the field.
It's the first time, apparently, that in 29 instances that teams with two batsmen getting centuries didn't win.
Yeah.
So,
it's the importance of those last five overs as well, isn't it? Yes. Because that's where Pakistan got away from us.
Yeah.
Well, it's really very early days. There's been an enormous amount to talk about. We've barely scratched the surface. Are you sticking with New Zealand top four, Jim? Who else?
I think England will get in the top four. I think Australia and India. Those are my top four.
I think the West Indies are still going to sneak into the top four.
India actually played rather nicely, didn't they, yesterday, when they did get going.
They're so well-drilled, aren't they? Such a well-drilled side, aren't they?
And without, as Jim once put it in a very different context years ago, without a significant innings from their gifted leader yesterday. I'm surprised that Rohit Sharma hasn't played more test cricket, to be honest, but a very fine one-day player indeed. Well, by next month, and you may well be away at the time, Jim, but if you're not, we might see if we can sneak you back under some set of circumstances or other. We, of course, still shan't have got to the World Cup final, because that's the 14th of July.
Right.
So we'll still be
a long way off, isn't it?
It
is a long way indeed. Tim, thanks for being here tonight and all your hard work. and for bringing Leatherhead in. That was really interesting.
Yeah, it was good to see you.
To have
Adrian in earlier on as well. That was good from Three Bridges.
Absolutely. So. Jim, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for your analysis and insight. And no doubt we'll do it all over again very soon. That was the June edition of On the Front Foot. We're Susie Radio's Cricket Chat Show, and we'll be back on the first Thursday of next month. If you need to get in touch, my email, david.j@susieradio.com, and you'll find the show on our website, susieradio.com. From me, good night.